your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit insurekidsnow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Welcome to the Lorehounds look at season two of Peacemaker. I'm Alicia, the Eagly Lover, one of your guides to the quantum unfolding chamber.
And I'm Jean, Hardcore's biggest hater and co-host of Comics Versus Does the DC Universe, where we're suspicious of dragons of any color. But Alicia and I are not alone for our Peacemaker coverage, not this season.
And I'm Aaron, the only host of Radioactive Ramblings with the taste level to appreciate the genius of this series. And we're here today to recap and analyze episode one of season two, The Ties That Grind. And if you haven't yet listened to Jean and Alicia's season one breakdown for spoiler-free discussion of the show overall, background on production, and a recap of season one and the Suicide Squad, get into it. I listened to it yesterday and it was fantastic.
Oh, thanks. Oh,
thank you. Thank you. Yeah, we're not going to do spoiler free. We're going to just jump right into the first episode of season two, all spoilers on the table. And that does include everything else like in the DCU, DCEU, anything DC movies, TV, comics, all of that. So let's check in. Jean, what do you think? The Ties, the Grind, the title of the episode. Obviously, you know, James Gunn loves his punny titles, but what do you think this means, The Ties, the Grind?
Wow. What an opening question, Alicia.
Gosh. And why is 42 the meaning of life, the universe, and everything?
I'm on my first cup of coffee, and there's nothing in it. Lord, have mercy. Wow. I think that watching the episode, just what holds people together, what brings them together, what tears them apart. And I thought about that, you know, the family structure that Chris has when he stepped through the door and saw this other family structure that he didn't have. Right. And how those people were tied together in a way that he seemingly never had. And he's trying to get with, you know, the 11th Street crew. So yeah, I think that's what, to me, that would be the meaning of the title for me.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, I think that makes sense. It's, I mean, we know that this is a show that's about relationships. And this is about the good and the bad of it, I suppose, you can be corrupted by someone like Augie Smith or, you know, how love can save you, I suppose. Aaron, here's a question for you. So you have covered The Boys on Radioactive Ramblings.
Yeah, and, great job on that.
Thank
yes,
you.
Yes, absolutely. Are you guys going to do Gen V, by the way, coming up?
We are. We're definitely going to do Gen V. And that might overlap a little bit with our Fallout coverage, but we'll be working overtime during that.
The Fallout coverage was good, too. So, yeah.
Thank you.
So John just started, he just watched the first Peacemaker episode and his first take was like, is it like The Boys? And what do you think? How is Peacemaker like or not like The Boys?
I think it's like The Boys in that it's a very violent kind of played up universe, but at the same time, it doesn't have that same twist of all of the heroes being horrible people. They make a lot of jokes about it, but it's not a world that's inherently broken and over the top in the way that The Boys is.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it has more heart, I would say. That's
for sure. Yeah. And if Peacemaker were in The Boys, he would not have any kind of redemption. He would just be full on evil the whole way through.
That's true. He wouldn't be questioning it. Mm-hmm. Aaron, while we're talking to you, since we didn't get to check in on you, what's your story with Peacemaker? You were interested in talking about it. So what drew you to this show? Did you watch it live? What do you like about it?
Yeah, I did watch it live. I came to the party a little bit late. I think I came to it about halfway through the run in season one because a different podcast that I enjoyed was watching it, and mm-hmm. it just sounded like a fun time. I had watched Suicide Squad and definitely enjoyed that, but I honestly had no interest in a show about Peacemaker until mm-hmm. I had heard that it was good. I thought, such a strange character to be making a spinoff about, and they just proved me completely wrong, and I was so glad that I ended up hopping on that bandwagon.
And any favorite characters?
Vigilante is definitely up there. I thought that season one, Murn was a really interesting character. I'm sad that he's not going to have much of a presence, or not really any presence in season two. Adebayo is awesome. Didn't have a whole lot of love for Harcourt. I think I'm in the same boat as you, Jean. I think that yes. didn't get quite enough.
Welcome aboard. I'm the captain of the anti-Harcourt ship. That's right.
There's just so many characters to love in this series, and they do a good job of making sociopaths lovable.
Mm, yeah. So you said that you were a fan of the Suicide Squad, the 2021 James Gunn one. Yes. How about the new DCU so far? Have you watched Creature Commandos and Superman, and what do you think overall?
I have not. I've really only gotten
not
into
Superman?
This. I really need to get on Superman. Okay. Everyone that's seen it has told me it's the best movie I've seen all year. You have to watch it. My choices the other day when I went to the movie theater were Fantastic Four or Superman. So I chose Fantastic Four.
Okay.
I mean, you can't go wrong. You can't go
wrong. All right. What'd you think of Fantastic Four? Yeah. Yeah.
It was awesome. It was a return to form for a Marvel movie. Loved it.
Cool. Okay. Well, then you got to get on Superman because we're going to talk about some crossover stuff this episode too.
Yes. I don't mind spoilers. So go right ahead.
All right. So this episode was about Peacemaker interviews for a spot on the Justice Gang while Harcourt struggles to find work on the heels of Adebayo's bombshell press conference. Economos is forced to surveil Peacekeeper under Rick Flagg Sr.'s new management. And Jean, let's start with you. What is your overall hot takes about The Ties That Grind?
Yeah, I thought it was a nice, fun start to the season. I have questions about things, which is always a good thing for episode one for me. Wanting to get some answers to some things. So yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed this first episode. Since, you know, the tie-ins with the, we'll talk about the episode more, mm-hmm. but the tie-ins that they had with Supes, I thought was really cool. Mm-hmm. They did it well. It wasn't like, you know, hit you over the head with a hammer, you know, type of thing. So it was really, you know, played well into the story. I think I get points for saying that Flag Senior knows.
Mm-hmm. I did it further in the notes. I gave you points.
Yeah.
I gave you credit.
You
were right.
Flag Senior knows. So that was a nice, you know, I'm glad they didn't drag that out. Like mm-hmm. whether either he knows or he doesn't, and they let us mm-hmm. know immediately. And I was very happy about that. Harcourt, man. She's she needs help.
Uh-huh.
I feel for her. You know what I mean? I don't like her, but I recognize that this is someone who's screaming out for some sort of assistance from somebody, somewhere, someplace. Yeah, and I hope she gets it because she's just as fucked up as Chris is mentally.
At this point, perhaps even more, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, we kind of know why Chris is the way that he is, but I'm not sure I know why Harcourt is the way that she is, right? So I'm hoping to get some clue into what makes her this way. What you know, how was she formed to be this person that she is? Because she's terrifying. Yeah. And what can I say about, you know, Greybeard? Like, is he a badass? Like, he has a gun. Economos has a gun now. Like, he's walking around surveilling people, doing all sorts of, you know, undercover work. Like, I'm trying to see if this guy is really going to start, you know, taking what he did in season one up to a whole new level. Like, is he going to be on the level of everybody else on the show in terms of, you know, just straight up bang bang everybody in sight. I want to see it. So yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with pretty much all of those points. By the way, I just want to apologize for any background noise on my side of the mic. It's the peak day of a once in 5 year festival that takes place in my neighborhood. So they're setting up outside and it's getting real loud all of a sudden.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So, okay, Aaron, you came into this season then obviously with high expectations. Did
Very.
This first episode meet them?
I would say it lived up for the most part. We got to a certain point where I thought the episode was almost over when Chris is walking through all of the doors. And then it just kept on going. And I was like, wow, we got a lot of content in this first episode. But a few of the plot lines are worrying me a little bit. I don't know that I really care for an ongoing good Augie and living Keith plot line, the whole multiverse side of that. I think that it would be more interesting for Chris to confront his demons in other ways.
Okay.
On a less serious note, I want to know how Vigilante is still employed as a busboy when he's cursing at his boss and going out for 30-minute phone calls with Economos.
And crashing his wedding uninvited.
Oh my, that would be the last straw. Yeah. That's
nuts. What does this say about, what's his name? That he keeps him on staff.
He must have some kind of affinity for Vigilante.
Exactly,
for
sure. That's what it means. What does it say about him?
He secretly likes him. He's amused.
Totally. And my favorite kind of retcon, it's one that isn't really acknowledged, so I thought that the flashback being a retconned version of the ending of season one was just awesome. It was so well done.
Yeah.
We don't need a whole explanation of, oh, we're in a different universe, we're here, we're there. I think that they did it, they moved on, and now this is where we are.
Yeah.
And the fight choreography for the Harcourt bar fight, that might have been my favorite part of the episode.
Yeah, that was really well done.
Yeah, that was, I mean, yeah, the fight choreo feels really real in this. Like you feel the bones crunching, and it doesn't, because that is a pet peeve of mine when you really feel like it's staged. And in this case, it feels visceral.
Yeah, totally. It did.
Yeah. I mean, I agree with most of the above. Like, I'm hoping for more Vigilante. I'm looking forward to that. Obviously, that's coming. Please and thank you. Everybody's favorite. I am glad that they did not prolong any of these things. Like, indeed, just ripping off the Band-Aid and starting the season running with the whole, with setting up where they are at this point, with setting up this other universe. I thought, after seeing the trailers, that Chris might wrestle with killing his other self to take his place. But this is, I'm glad it's just over with. And he's like, right. Opening, what do I do with that? I think it might take a bit for this season warm up. And we were talking about season one grew more than 40% while it was airing. And, Aaron, you are proof positive of that as well. And I have a feeling this is going to, because it's such a dense TV landscape, it's going to take a couple episodes for this to really warm up. But I think that they are laying the foundations here for what's going to be a really satisfying multiversal story. And I'm in the camp of like, everybody, please stop hating on multiversal storytelling. I've been into this stuff since I think I read my first two multiverse stories in a way, or extra dimensional stories, Flatland and The Boy Who Reversed Me. I when I was like 12, I read them really close to each other and they blew my mind. And I've been obsessed ever since. And I'm like, now we might finally be getting, like Everything Everywhere All at Once. That was a very satisfying multiversal tale. The comic books deliver a lot of satisfying multiversal storytelling.
They do.
For sure.
And so this feels like it might be playing on those promises, because what makes multiversal storytelling interesting to me is the question. I do sit in my day and think about like, oh, what about the Alicia who went to Columbia and studied screenwriting instead of what I did? What happened with her? What is she doing now at this point in her life? Things like that. And, this is really exploring that, the emotional aspects, the how we're shaped by circumstance aspects. So I think it's going to go deep. We already got John Cena crying in episode one. So.
And let me shout out John Cena, since you just brought it up, because I was not in the camp of even thinking that he could pull something like this off. And to me, it's amazing that the range that he shows in this show is truly amazing. And like, I never would have considered him to be able to pull any of this, any of the scenes that he's pulling and making me feel like, wow, like kudos to him, because he's an actor, you know, he's an actor, and he's just amazing in this show, really.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. He really brings this cartoon to life. Yeah. Aaron, were you a fan of the season one dance opening?
Oh, it was my favorite part. I never skipped it.
That's the correct answer.
Yeah. And just the soundtrack is so magnificent. James Gunn always puts a killer soundtrack in anything he does.
Yeah. And what do you think of, we'll talk about the new one more toward the end, because there's some clues about what's coming. But what did you think about it overall, the new one? Are you happy with it?
Yeah, it felt a lot bigger. And I feel like we got a good idea of which characters are important. It's almost like that beginning dance scene is a spoiler for the rest of the series of who's going to be important and who's not. And I kind of appreciate that.
Yeah. So wait, who was not in it that... I mean, okay, one person who was not in it that I clocked was Adebayo's wife, Kia, from last season. She was in last season's, but not this one. But then you never know, because there were some characters that just didn't show up. And yeah, I don't know. Anyway. So, the season, all the episodes were written by James Gunn. This one was directed by him, although he did share the directing duties with others on other episodes. The multiversal element of this story, it's partially also inspired by Philip Roth's The Counterlife, apparently, which I haven't read, but now I want to. It sounds quite interesting. Apparently it was going to be more so like that, but they decided to go in this direction, I think. I think they're setting up for emotional payoff and also just for, explaining how all the DC stuff connects. Jean, how long is the episode and what are people saying?
This first episode was 44 minutes. Rotten Tomatoes. Yeah, 44 minutes long was pretty good. Rotten Tomatoes has it 98. Season one was a 93. Right? So that's a market change. Metacritic has it at a 78. Season one was a 70, which is again pretty high praise when we compare them season to season. I think we don't know how long episode 6, 7, 8 will be, but episode 2 is going to be 48 minutes. And then the next two episodes, 3 and 4, are 40 minutes. So I'm interested to see how that plays in with the storytelling. Like, I don't want things to get crammed and, you know?
Right. But I guess it makes sense to have the longer, as you said, we don't know the length of the last three episodes because James Gunn is keeping them under lock and key because apparently there'll be spoilers. Major spoilers. So I'm wondering if we're going to get some kind of crazy crossovers or something. But I think it makes sense to have the first two episodes be on the longer end because it gives you time to establish things.
Yeah, especially with the whole multiversal angle and the new characters from the new DCU, they kind of have to establish this new universe for us.
Yeah, exactly. Off to a good start. So let's take a quick break. And when we get back, let's talk about what actually happened in the episode. See you in a sec.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Okay, so previously in the DCU, which, Jean, what did you think about the catch you up retcon?
Retcon recap. Yeah, I'm cool with it, but you know how I feel.
You didn't like that Cavill was replaced with another Superman.
Yeah, man, you know, it's all good. It's all good. I love this new soup. Don't get me wrong, but Cavill was my guy, so. It was a bittersweet moment for me, but it is what it is. On to the new.
But to make up for that, so, I mean, Corden Sweat, as I've already said, is my Superman. Do you, yes. Who's your overall, Aaron? Oh, you haven't seen it yet. That's right.
You haven't seen Corden Sweat. Up to now, who's your Superman? Okay.
I think I'm already adopting Corden Sweat as my Superman. Yeah, even though I haven't seen it, I like Henry Cavill a lot as an actor. I think that he puts his all into everything that he's in. You can tell he loves the character, but I just have such a disconnect from the Snyderverse. I did not mess with that era of superhero movies whatsoever. So I'm totally on board embracing the new.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, I like that Corden Sweat, you know, again, we did a whole episode about Superman. I'll link it in the show notes. But I like, this is in large part how James Gunn is writing and directing it also, of course, and also in how David Corden Sweat himself is portraying it, but that mix of like being that hopeful Boy Scoutish, but with vulnerability and feels emotions. And yeah, I just like this take on Superman a lot. And he's embodying it well, in my personal opinion. Yeah. Anyway, fun fact though, I learned in an interview recently that Peter Safran, the seldom spoken of business side of the, you know, he's the partner of James Gunn at the head of DC Studios. He's the one who actually pushed to start with Superman. He's like, you got to start with Superman. You have to.
Makes sense.
But coming from the business side, that's promising, right?
I mean, yeah, because I think he gets it, you know, just by doing that, for me, he gets it. Like, you have to, like, the DC universe has to start with Supes. That's just the bottom line. It has
to start. It often starts with Batman, but yeah.
I know, but Supes is the guy that you have to start it off with. If you're going off on a new tangent, you're telling these new stories about these characters, you have to start with Supes.
Right. For anyone who's confused, the Batman is in a separate universe, and we talk about that in other episodes, but we'll see. We'll see what happens in this one. It hasn't been ruled out to have, but anyway. But the DCEU, Cavill and Ben Affleck and all of those, they appeared at the end of season one as the Justice League, you know, and we saw the silhouettes of the DC, EU Justice League. So it's replaced here with the DCU Justice Gang. So you not only get Corden Sweat's great, but you also get Mr. Terrific and Guy Gardner's Green Lantern and Hawkgirl, and kind of a surprise to see in there, but I guess not, Supergirl.
Yeah.
Really great.
That wasn't a surprise.
You weren't surprised. I guess not. We know she must have been around for a minute.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised this year, so yeah.
Yeah. And then the jokes about Aquaman fucking fish is replaced with jokes about Guy Gardner saying Peacemakers as he puked on him on riding on a magic green carpet ride, and Guy liked it, and Guy says that's false.
I don't believe Guy. I believe either. Chris in this instance.
Oh. But yeah, just a reminder that those scenes were subbed in happened before the events of Superman, and now this episode we're talking about today happened very shortly after the events of Superman. So I guess, Aaron, you answer the question. Do you think people need to have seen Superman before they watch season two of Peacemaker? I guess you didn't feel like you missed anything for that.
I didn't feel like I missed anything. I definitely think that a little bit of context could have been added for me if I had seen the movie just with the recap. And I want to say they make an offhanded reference to Lex Luthor at some point during mm-hmm. the episode. I think they talk about him with the dimensional doors and whatnot. Yeah. So that part of it, I was a little confused. I wasn't sure what they were referencing, but it wasn't anything that hindered me from enjoying the episode. I think that if you haven't seen Superman, go right ahead and watch Peacemaker and you will be totally happy.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's get into the episode itself. We're going to talk about it plot arc by plot arc, not scene by scene. So we might discuss some scenes out of order. Jean, do you want to set us up for Peacemaker's audition?
Yeah. Adebayo drives Chris Smith, aka Peacemaker, to an audition with the Justice Gang, now that he's a superhero who saved the world from the butterflies and all that. After enduring a slew of insults, thanks to a faulty PA system, Peacemaker walks out of the interview totally dejected.
Why do you think he wants to join the Justice Gang in the first place? Like,
legitimacy. It cements him as a superhero, for real, for real.
Okay. You know,
like, he's not in the shadows. He's not working covertly to kill people. Now he's, you know, part of a team that people recognize as doing good, which is what he wants. He wants people to see him as doing good.
Yeah. I don't know if he can ever escape that legacy that his father saddled to him with sort of guilt by association and probably guilt by doing things that his father told him to. But he definitely wants to try. And I think that's a good thing for him to be doing. I don't necessarily think he'll ever escape that stink, though.
Yeah, that is an interesting thing for them to explore with the alternate universe, too. You know, does he not have that stink on him? Does he have a different stink on him? You know?
Yeah.
I just don't believe things are so perfect over there as they seem.
Me neither.
Yeah, for sure.
So we saw White Rabbit leaving in tears. And of course, I had to look it up. I was like, who is this Playboy Bunny looking superhero? And apparently it's Jaina Hudson, daughter of an American diplomat and Bollywood actress who has a split persona. So it's kind of like a more limited version of Duplicate from Invincible and Moon Knight from Marvel. But literally whitewashing, because when she goes into the superhero, she gets blonde. She's like a half Indian woman, you know, from India. And when she goes into superhero form, she becomes a light skinned blonde woman. So I mean, it's a typical deep catalog pull from James Gunn. But I wonder what he's, if we're going to see this character, if this is just like, here's a weirdo character, or if that means something more. I did notice when Peacemaker's watching her go and she's in this, you know, kind of Playboy Bunny type costume, he's not looking at her in a sexual way. He's just looking at her like, what the hell's going
on? What the fuck?
Yeah.
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 So is that growth? Which is his nerves takeover.
I think his nerves. I don't know if it's growth.
I'll give him credit for growth. So there were three characters in this scene that we met in Superman. And so, Aaron, was this your note? Who is Maxwell Lord? Was that from you?
That was you.
Okay. Yeah. So you know the answer to it. Do you want to answer?
Yes, I mean. The thing is, I know the answer to it, right? Max Lord is, you know, he, think of Tony Stark without the Iron Man suit, right? In the beginning, he has a long history in DC Comics. Father was committed suicide, but was committed to helping people, so he wants to do the same thing. But then in different DC sagas, like Crisis on Infinite Earths, Invasion, all sorts of different things happen in DC Comics. At one point, he's like a robot replaced, but now he's a flesh and blood person with metagene powers to control, mind control people that's unlocked. But he was killed by Wonder Woman because he was about to take over the world and kill all the heroes. A big story with, you know, all sorts of layers. It's a lot. It's a lot. He actually kills Ted Kord, another hero. And if you ever heard of Brother Eye and the OMAX, this was a program that Batman had installed to watch the world. And he was able to take this program over, and the OMAX were going to, you know, basically destroy everything. Wonder Woman kills him.
Sounds like a program Iron Man would like.
Yeah. Talk about it. Yeah, you're right. But the interesting thing is, I know Max Lord as a villain, right? Gunn was asked about that, and he had a response. Hold on. Let me bring it up. So someone asked Gunn, let me credit the person, Jeremiah 2882. Hey, Mr. Gunn, so the guy that's funding the Justice Gang is Maxwell Lord. Isn't that character a villain in the comics? James Gunn's response to him, it says, Max was recounted as sort of a muscular evildoer after originally being conceived by Jim DeMatteis as a multi-layered character who was morally gray. Along with skinny Amanda Waller, it wasn't one of my favorite comic reimaginings. Our Max is inspired by the original version, so don't be waiting for him to shoot Blue Beetle in the face.
Interesting. So we should say he's played in the DCU by Sean Gunn, James Gunn's brother, who also plays the Weasel, and he did in Creature Commandos the what's his face? Oh, what's the robot's name again?
G.I.
Robot?
Yeah, it's a G.I. Robot.
I think so. Yeah.
My Creature Commando is not online. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, G.I. Robot. But those, of course, are just his voice. So he can play a different character that shows his face. But we've seen him. We saw he had a cameo in Superman.
Right.
And we saw that, you know, in Peacemaker and in Superman, if you pay attention to the technology that they're using, it will often be branded Lord Tech, which is obviously his company. And we know he's the sponsor of the Justice Gang in the DCU. So it's not a surprise to see him there at auditions.
And that's very true to the comics, that he's a sponsor of the superhero team. He wants to work with the metahumans in order to make the world better. But he turns evil. So I'm wondering if, you know, when they mentioned him in the Supes movie, I was like, oh, Max is doing this. I'm like, okay, what's going on here? Right. And then you see him sitting in the interviews with Green Lantern and Hawkgirl. And I'm like, I can't fully trust what James Gunn is saying. I can't fully trust it.
Yeah.
I can't fully trust it.
He was the character also that Pedro Pascal played in Wonder Woman 1984, which is a totally different reimagined version, but you could see, definitely a villain. So, we'll keep an eye on Maxwell Lord, whatever James Gunn says.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, Eric. I was just going to say, he's definitely an asshole. I don't know if I get a quite villainous vibe out of him. I think he might just be a little bit of a jerk.
Okay. Yeah, we actually see more of him in this episode of Peacemaker than we saw of him in the movie Superman. He just showed up, like we just saw him get out of a car at the end. But I thought it was interesting, just based on, for what John said, James Gunn said aside, just based on what I know of his character in previous iterations, it was interesting. He said, put sociopathy there for Peacemaker. When, you know, we've had discussions on this, I do not think Peacemaker is a sociopath. I think he's got things wrong with him, not that. And I feel like Maxwell Lord typically is more so.
Yes, I would agree with that. I want to see where it goes. This is one character that I'm keeping my eyes out in the overall DC universe, because I want to see how he plays into what this universe comes to be.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's going to play a large role, personally. I just think he's going to play a large role.
Yeah. I mean, he's going to be pulling some strings for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You mean he's going to play like a supervillain role?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Maybe like, yeah, we'll see. It'll be interesting because there are a lot of super intelligent characters being set up, and also like these, a lot of like tech bros being set up in the James Gunn DC universe. So I'm wondering if he's going somewhere a particular direction with that. So Aaron, this was then your first exposure to Guy Gardner, the Green Lantern played by Nathan Fillion, and Hawkgirl, aka Kendra Saunders, played by Isabella Merced. What did you think of those characters from this glimpse?
It's a duo I need to see infinitely more of. The two of them together were hilarious. Their comments from behind that wall were cracking me up the whole time. Poor Chris. I mean, that guy's been through so much, but it didn't make it any less funny, especially when he starts going into his whole spiel about his family, and Hawkgirl immediately says, "Let's get some popcorn. Come on, it's another sob story."
Terrible people.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally. All three of them are terrible, talking about the poor woman's camel toe.
Yes. Terrible people.
It just, like, the thing about Guy Gardner is, like, he clearly lacks empathy. You know, he thinks it's funny that they said, you know, the people heard these horrible, hurtful things about themselves. But it does seem like he mostly does the right thing. Would you say that, Sean, about Guy Gardner?
That he mostly does the right thing.
He'll be a dick about it, but
no, he's a hero in a way that Chris is not a hero,
right?
Guy's
even though
going,
he's a jackass.
Yeah, he's a jack. Yeah, definitely. But I wouldn't consider him to be an anti-hero or something like that. Like he's not the Punisher,
right? Right, right.
Yeah, he's not Peacemaker. He's a hero. He's a jerk, but he's a hero.
We know we're getting a Lantern Corps show next year. Do you want to explain quickly what that is?
Is it a Lantern Corps show?
It's going to be, I know that Guy Gardner will be in it also, but we also know there will be the two other
multiple Green Lanterns, right? Mm-hmm. So we don't know much about it except that it's, you know, it's Jon Stewart and Hal, the two main Green Lanterns, as far as I'm concerned, in DC Universe comics. Doing some crime solving in what looks like to be some rural community in the middle of the US. So I want my Green Lanterns to be Green Lanterns, you know what I mean? And I hope I'm not getting True Detectives here.
I mean, it seems like we've only seen the DCU Guy Gardner. I'll say, Aaron, when you see Superman, you'll get to see Guy Gardner use his powers a lot. And I think that was really cool how they did it.
Nice.
So I think, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I don't know.
Go ahead.
I don't have the protectiveness of the Green Lanterns the way you do. So you'll be the one to say if they misstep. But so far, I'm like, so far, it's cool.
No, they haven't. Like no, no. What we've seen so far is great. I'm just wondering what the story will be in the Lantern TV show with John and Hal. And for people who don't know, the Green Lanterns are like an intergalactic Interpol police force, or, you know, going through different sectors of the universe to ensure that evil doers and criminals are brought to justice and to try to stop bad things from happening. And how Guy Gardner and Hal are both, everybody has a different sector of the universe. So it's like, think of it as like police that are in different precincts, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I grew up with the Ryan Reynolds Green Lantern, so I have very low expectations and high hopes.
Don't get me started.
That was me going into the new the new Fantastic Four. I was like, well, I've seen the, you know, I watched the other movies. I think they can do better. Did you watch any of the animated series like Justice League, Young Justice League, any of those?
Not so much. I have been halfway through season one of the Harley Quinn animated series for a while.
Nice. But keep going.
Yeah, I know. I need to get back on that one. But the Justice League cartoons were ones that I would watch whenever they were on TV when I was younger, but I never went all the way through one of them.
Yeah, definitely for a younger audience, but still with, I think, you know, mature storytelling.
For sure.
Yeah, I think those JLA cartoons were some of the best DC storytellings on screen, quite honestly. Young Justice, all of that stuff was really, they told some really great stories and they did it really well. Yeah.
Mm. And so fans of those might be more familiar with Hawkgirl. So we discussed this, I guess, when we were discussing Superman, but we got confirmation. James Gunn does, or she says, Isabella Merced, the actress who plays her, says that it is Kendra Saunders, but it's a combination of two different versions of Hawkgirl from the comics. So she is still the reincarnated, was it ancient Egyptian? What's Hawkgirl's story?
Yeah, Hawkgirl and Hawkman. They have traditionally been portrayed as reincarnations of two Egyptians that each time they die, they come back. And they've been living in different lives for thousands of years. And so with their memories intact, so they know, right? And that's what that's who they are. So they're reincarnated, I guess, partners, lovers, whatever you want to call them.
Mm. And we did get in the DCEU, so we're talking the Cavillverse, not the Corin Sweatverse. We did get a Hawkman that I really liked in Black Adam. We got Aldous Hodge, and I thought the Justice Society was far and away the best part of Black Adam. But I think we're losing all of those actors. I'm like, bring back Aldous Hodge as Hawkman.
I mean, Black Adam was, God.
Yeah. I think that's my lowest ranked in the DCEU, if I remember correctly. Were you a fan, Aaron? No, you already said that the Snyderverse wasn't your bag.
No, I watched most of those movies, but I don't think I enjoyed any of them. Even when the Snyder cut came out, I was just sitting there like, I don't get what the hype is about. I don't know.
It was just longer.
This one's so what makes this one so special?
I go to bat for the Snyder cut. I go to bat for that 4-hour film. You know what I'm saying? Citizen Kane. Let's go. That's what I'm saying.
It's sweater sniffing ways.
That's awesome.
More slow-mos of Jason Momoa. anyway, but they should bring back Hawkman. My question, though, is two questions. One is about Hawkgirl. Is that from the animated series? I have to admit, I have not read her comics, although I'm curious to do so. But I know she can be a dark and unpredictable character. So I'm curious if James Gunn is going to play on that at all. My other question is, where's Metamorpho? They didn't even mention him. They already have a new team member.
They do. That's true. That's true. But this takes place before.
The audition, I think.
The audition was after. Was after everything. Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. Okay. Okay. That's a good point.
Metamorpho was one of my favorite characters in Superman.
I mean, not everybody needs to sit in the interviews, man.
No. He doesn't need to sit in the interviews, but I just would have liked we already have one new team member. Acknowledgement. Don't make me nervous. Aaron, do you hope to see more of the Justice Gang this season?
Absolutely. If I don't see Guy Gardner at least 3 or 4 more times, I'm going to be disappointed for sure. Yeah.
I love the bowl cut, for the record. I don't know.
I thought that the bowl cut was the biggest villain in this episode.
it suits him.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
Aaron, do you want to set up some sucky job hunting?
Absolutely. Amelia Harcourt and Leota Adebayo are also having a rough time getting work after Adebayo exposed Argus's shady operations publicly at the end of the last season. Adebayo has now separated from her wife and lives in what Economos calls the worst level of Grand Theft Auto. And Amelia doesn't know where to funnel her anger now that she's been rejected by every government agency and diagnosed with toxic masculinity. When Chris shows up at Harcourt's house to check in on her, she refers to a mysterious night on a party boat between seasons that she calls a mistake, while Chris clearly hopes for something more.
So, Jean, you are on record on our season one recap of being a hardcore hater and also
yes.
the intro.
Yes.
What did you think watching this? Were you thinking like, oh, I'm getting more insight? Or were you like more of her being her?
No, it's more of her being her and me being horrified at her being her. Like, truly. She's tough to like, man. I'm on record. I don't like Peacemaker either. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's not like I like Peacemaker and I don't like, these are two people who are very difficult to like for mm-hmm. me. Mm-hmm. Which is why the show is so good, because I still want to watch this show, even though I don't like these, some of the main characters I have an intense dislike for. But she is just, when she's in the car and she's punching the dashboard, I'm like, girl, like, if that's not a sign that you need serious help, you need some serious walking through your trauma, whatever the trauma is, you need to get some help. Is there no one in her life that, recognizes this at all? Because I think everyone's trying to help Chris, but it seems like, she's alienated a lot of people, it seems like.
Yeah, if first of all, it's interesting, and also commentary, I think, on the way these things work in government jobs and things like that, is she's being diagnosed with something, but not in a way of like, oh, let's help you through this, but in a way of this is why we're rejecting you. Now go deal with it. I did notice she brings up, she's like, what is that? The DSM-3 there, which is the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. It is the sort of handbook for clinical psychology in terms of breaking down what different disordered behavior looks like. And, the classifications thereof, et cetera, et cetera. So I immediately clocked it because, I have a background studying psychology. She said the DSM-3, that went out of use in 1987. And we are currently up to the DSM-5 now, as pointed out, and that's been in use since 2013. So it made me wonder, I look at the date 1987. Was she diagnosed with something in childhood? Was she put in therapy in childhood? Did she have a bad experience? Is there something she's pulling through from that? Because that's such a specific thing for her to know and get wrong.
Right.
Aaron, what do you think of her behavior of going to the bar and drinking alone?
I think that she was definitely hoping for a fight when she walked into that greasy biker bar. Totally. Absolutely. She just wanted to beat someone up who deserved it, and she got what she asked for sure. And, it was such a satisfying scene when she breaks the beer bottle over that guy's head. And even though she ends up getting kicked out of the bar, just that little bit of choreographed bar fight was just awesome. But her and Chris are for sure a dysfunctional match made in heaven. They're made for each other. And it makes it all the more unfortunate that she's pushing away the only person who seems to really understand what she's going through.
Yeah. It's interesting because we see also Chris dealing, like, she seems to, we saw her going to the bar alone in the first season. It's like, guys, just leave her alone. But then you notice she does hope someone starts some shit so that she can fight.
Right.
But in the same time, like, Chris is not his toxic behavior is not in wanting to fight everyone. It's in escaping into drugs and sex. So they are kind of two sides of the same coin in a way. And just they're running away from their problems in ways that might be harmful. Yeah.
And what did you guys think about all of the overdue bills that she had? I wonder if she's going to have to go on the run or be with someone
else. She needs a job.
She needs a job. She needs a job. And needing a job. And when she says, what am I supposed to do? Right. When she's walking out, this is all I've known. Right. It's that's some real shit. You know, you've been doing something most of your life and have been pretty good at it. And now they're telling you that the one thing that you think you've been pretty good at, you can no longer do. And it's not because of something that you did. That's pretty fucked up. You know what I mean? But then to go into a bar and just, you know, sit there waiting for someone to say the wrong thing, and you know it's going to happen. So she picked that bar on purpose. You know what I mean? She went in there with the intent to start some shit and hurt some people and maybe get hurt herself. You know what I mean? It's a cry for help, man. Like, these are people who are crying out for help. And it's just like, who's gonna get it, and at what cost to the people around them?
Yeah.
Her behavior makes me wonder if she genuinely has been blackballed by or blacklisted by Amanda Waller, or if all of these agencies are looking at her and saying, this is a person who really isn't fit to be in this agency.
Yeah, loose cannon.
I think it's Waller. Because those agencies, they don't give a fuck.
Yeah, Waller is the loose cannon.
Exactly.
For sure.
They don't care. They don't care. You're like, sign me up for that. I need 10 more of those. You know what I mean? We need 10 more of those on the team. That's what they say. So I really think it is Waller, yeah.
Yeah.
To be fair, though, we did see Hardcore and Peacemaker absolutely murder 30 Seconds to Mars this episode.
Oh, gosh. So. That was so bizarre.
Like, I think it's Jared Leto hate.
You really do?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. James Gunn's even made comments about to Jared Leto about he's not like the man.
Really?
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's real life. Oh, okay.
He was basically, he was pulling a Kendrick and dropping a diss track.
Yeah, I respect that. I respect it a lot. Wow. That's
great.
Gunn, I didn't know you he was this petty. Oh, shit. Yo. Yo, Gunn petty as fuck. That's dope. You'll love to see it. I'm here for that. I'm here. Oh.
Speaking of passing the popcorn. But John, what do you think about Adebayo? Do you think she is as okay as she claims in her level of
No. Like, they're all struggling, man. They're all struggling. They're out here, like, she's separated from her wife. You know, we don't know. Look at the car she's driving. I mean, it's bad. it's bad. She did the right thing, and she's suffering for doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You know, she outed the people who needed to be outed, let the world know what was going on, her mother at that, and it cost her. It cost them. And she doesn't look right. She doesn't look okay to me. She's trying to look okay by helping Chris, but she's not okay. Nah.
Aaron, do you think her security consulting company is going to do well?
I don't think so. I think that at some point this season, we're going to see Economos out on his ass from Argus. We're going to see everyone just struggling and running from the government together.
I agree. I think so. I think so. I think they're all, they're not in good, positions in life right now. Everything is really tenuous, you know?
Absolutely.
Do you think this could be a villain team up origin story?
No. No.
Okay. All right. I mean, Adebayo, she is still, we see her, she's still the emotional glue of the team. It seems like most of them aren't in touch, but she's, it seems like she's keeping in touch with most people. Do you think, is she keeping in touch with Vigilante is the question. That's the one person we don't know.
I would not.
So you would not.
Let me be clear about that. I hope she's not. I would not.
I would let him tell me owl facts. he can call me with owl facts.
No. Yeah, no, thank you. I'm like, no.
I think Economos secretly loves those phone calls.
Yeah.
Yes, of course he does. Yeah. Yes.
All right. So I'll set it up. Economos has been posted outside Chris's house by Rick Flagg Sr., who is looking for any reason to arrest Peacemaker. Bored and uncomfortable with this task, Economos accepts daily phone calls from Adrian Chase, a.k.a. Vigilante, to listen to him pretend to know owl facts and other distractions. It seems like Vigilante is kind of lonely. Like, what do you think's up with him and Peacemaker? Peacemaker, like, Chris is keeping him at a distance or something.
Yeah, he is. Absolutely. Because he doesn't know how to be friends with a guy.
No.
He doesn't know how to do that.
Do you think Dave is going to end up dead this season?
Oh.
His manager at Fennel Fields.
I could see Vigilante getting a little annoyed with Dave and lashing out.
No, he's not going to kill Dave.
Maybe Dave just ends up dead by accident.
Maybe.
Might be collateral. He wasn't in the opening dance, was he? No, no, I don't.
He might be collateral damage, but I don't think Vigilante would like. It's going to just kill him outright. No.
I hope the owl facts thing becomes a through line throughout the season, though. I hope the Vigilante and us learn many owl facts, like their tubular eyes. I did not know that owls had tubular eyes.
I had no idea tubular eyes were even a thing.
No, nor did Vigilante. I clocked that Economos still dyeing his beard, but now no roots. I'm not sure if that's a better look, but okay. And we met two new people to Argus. Or wait, did we meet Tim Meadows? No.
No.
He wasn't in this episode yet. We know Tim Meadows is going to play an Argus agent called Langston Fleury, but we did meet this episode Saul Rodriguez as Sasha Bordeaux. And I realized, I was like, what do I know her from? And I looked it up, and it was this cheesy Christmas movie I watched with my mom called Holiday in the Vineyards.
Oh, gosh. How was it? You can't leave us hanging just there. How was it?
It was a cheesy Christmas movie about falling in love in wine country. Obviously, it was brilliant. It was bad, but brilliant. It was not good, but it was good. I guess there's not much to say yet about those characters. We're just getting them soft introduced. Saul Rodriguez's character, Sasha Bordeaux, but I know Sasha Bordeaux does come from the comics, but I don't know anything about her.
She's part of Checkmate. She's part of Argus. She's like a cyborg. She's like deadly. She's a really, really good hand-to-hand combatant. So, yeah.
Oh, I wonder if she'll become a cyborg this season.
Yeah, we might be seeing her origin story, maybe. Yeah. Who knows?
Cool. That would be pretty cool.
And we also got another cameo from Superman. Michael Ian Black was back as the talking head on a conservative talk show called The Sphere News, talking about how metahumans breaking out of Arkham and Belle Reve are dangerous, you know, just fear-mongering stuff. And Rick Flagg Sr. is for sure listening. So I guess this, Aaron, is also your first encounter with Rick Flagg Sr. He was in Creature Commandos and Superman, and now he's back. What is your impression of him so far?
He seems like a really petty guy out for revenge, trying to catch Peacemaker slip up. When I saw him, I had to look up the actor and
Frank Grillo,
get a little bit more info about him. I was shocked to learn that this guy is 60 years old. He does not look 60.
So in Creature Commandos, he had white hair, but while they were recording this and are filming this in Superman, he was also at the same time filming, what is it, the Tulsa King? So he had to have dark hair.
Okay. Yeah, he seems like an interesting character. I think he might be the ultimate villain of this season. I think he might be the big bad.
Yeah. We hear him tell Sasha that he's moving the case to Argus Priority One, and Sasha's like, wait, what? This seems like a personal vendetta. And he's sending someone to secretly supervise Economist, or secretly or not. Do you think, Sean, that...
No, not secretly.
Okay, just sending him for a new boss.
Yeah, just sending another pair of eyes on him. Make sure that he's doing what he's supposed to be doing.
All right. Because you were
right.
I don't
think Rick Flag is into secrets.
Okay. But you were right that he does know the Peacemaker killed his son. So we discussed that in the recap. Yeah, and he's just wasting, as Sasha said, a bunch of resources. Or no, I guess Economos said he's wasting a bunch of resources surveilling him just to see if he can pick him up for something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds familiar.
So, Aaron, when I was telling John that I don't think Peacemaker is really like the boys, I also had to admit that, okay, there's an orgy scene, but it's different. So how do you think it's different?
I think it's different in that in the boys, there was a very clear, like, what's happening here is really messed up and over the top. And in Peacemaker, it seems a lot more normal, if you can call an orgy normal. I don't know. It just, the way that the boys did it felt really horrible.
Yeah, I mean, they had people dying. Terrible. It's like the worst. It's the worst. It's like,
it is.
Oh, God. This is like,
if you don't follow the boys' Instagram account or Twitter account, you got to follow the Vought International accounts, because they're making a lot of Herogasm file jokes right now.
Oh, really? About Peacemaker?
No, just about their
in general.
And yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, this was just, I called it the episode of Second Breakfast we were just recording, a normal orgy. Like, what's a normal orgy? I'm like, I don't know, just naked people partying.
Naked people partying, doing drugs.
Yeah, they're not like, nobody's dying horribly.
Inhibition's gone.
They don't seem to have superpowers. They're just naked people partying.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I want to know what the casting call for that looks like.
Must be comfortable with nudity. James Gunn has been in several interviews recently saying that, like, the it sounds like the intimacy coordinator is one of his favorite people on set.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. Because there's a lot to be coordinated.
Yeah. He's that's sure. Great. I just tell them what I'm going for, and then they figure it all out, what they're comfortable with and how. And yeah. Although noticeably, Chris is not really participating in it. He's just kind of sitting there on the couch. And at one point, people start kissing him, and he's like, oh, yeah, that's nice. But then, you know. And then he goes, it seems like a really irresponsible time to open up the quantum unfolding chamber.
You think?
A little bit.
You think you don't want to open it when you're, you know, done a couple of lines of things, not just of one thing, of things.
And you have a house full of strangers.
Yeah, you're not thinking straight after you've done those lines. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not just Coke either. He's doing things.
How did he find that door to the alternate dimension when he was so messed up? I bet he couldn't even find his own bedroom door in that state, let alone the door to a different dimension.
I wonder, I mean, because they jump 6 months from that first time when he discovers it, because he's following Eagly to, you know, this period. So I wonder if he has retraced the steps many times in between, but not had the, although I was going to say, but not had the guts to go through, but although it sounded like Sasha was saying to Rick Flag that this was only the second time they detected it being opened.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't think he's actually done it again. Like, this is the first time since that initial shock of seeing his father.
Hmm.
Do we believe that Adebayo doesn't know about the door?
Yes. Yes, I think she would say if she did. And I don't see why Chris would tell her.
Right. I don't think he's told anyone, though. He didn't tell anyone about the door last season.
No, I don't think so. No. So Gunn does say that this is somehow related to Lex Luthor's pocket universe, but we're not really sure. Like something similar in how it's created as a space between dimensions. But obviously they're not physically connected, although James Gunn says that this one has 100 doors inside. So one of them must be the DC EU. Mm. So, okay, here's a question. We'll talk about the multiverse shenanigans more in a moment, but he sees the alien in the other thing. Like, are these all different versions of, you know, something that a version of Augie built? So on some alien planet, there's an alien Augie who built this door and is disposing of rats?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. They just happen to connect in the same... Because, like, Lex had his pocket universe. It felt like, you know, his place. And this one has all these matching doors that connect. So I'm curious if we're going to learn how this is built.
That, I think they have to let us know at some point how this all came to be, no?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I want to know. Like, I want to know.
Yeah. I mean, so what you didn't see and what you saw in the recap, Aaron, from Superman is that this Lex's version ended up opening a rift and that would like opened a rift through Metropolis, basically. And this is why Rick Flag, he has some reason for concern about the door, but it feels like he's going to take it too far for the wrong reasons.
Yeah. I don't get any vibe that the situation in Peacemaker's basement is unstable or at risk of causing a rift. It just, I think that Rick Flag is for sure targeting Peacemaker for personal reasons.
Like we talked about it in the Supes episode, in the Peacemaker episode from season that we did the recap, that technology seems so much more advanced and more stable than what Lex Luthor had.
Yeah, which is shameful to Lex Luthor. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hmm.
So we don't know if it's, you know, did it come from Earth? Did it come from somewhere else?
Yeah. Okay, well, let's pause there, take a quick break, and when we get back, we're going to get into all the multiversal shenanigans of this episode. See you in a moment.
One day, when it's snowing outside, Chris, who now lives in his deceased father's house, decides to take Eagly in the QUC to stretch his wings, instead of going out into the cold. There we see that this space is connected to doors into many other realities, both similar and wildly different from his own. He follows Eagly to a door just like his, through which he finds a version of himself living what seems to be a much better life. His brother and father are still alive. His father loves him, and they're a crime-fighting trio called the Trio. His counterpart and Harcourt were apparently in love, a couple. As he wonders at this different life he could have led, the Chris from this universe comes home to find him and attacks him, following our Chris as he tries to retreat back to the QUC. There, fighting for his life, our Chris kills the other Chris.
So far, we know there's imps behind some of these other doors. We know there's an alien neighbor who won't say hi, who funnily enough is credited as the kyphotic alien, which kyphosis is just basically like sitting with a hunched back. Like, I need to stop doing as I'm at my computer. So I'm curious about that. But Aaron, were you surprised to see adult Keith alive and well, played by David Denman?
I was surprised. Especially when we get the little scene at the beginning of the episode where Peacemaker is in the alternate universe house and he's looking at all of the different photos. I was wondering, who is that third person? It's clearly Peacemaker, his father, and someone else. And I just had no idea who that could be. But then Keith shows up, and it's just such a freaky experience for him, where all of these years of grief come up, and he has to face off against his brother who he killed. And it's an emotional moment, and it felt really powerful.
What do you think the difference is? Like, did his father not run a fight ring in this reality?
I think that we're going to find out that this version of reality is pretty bad as well. I think that Augie is a lot closer to how he is in the main universe, in this universe. Maybe he hates his kids a little bit less, but I'm going to say that he's still the racist, horrible person that he is in our universe.
I guess he's, so Augie Smith, Robert Patrick, he was the white dragon in season one. I guess he's the blue dragon here, but yeah, it's still, I don't know. Still walking and talking like a duck to me. What do you think? The top trio, though, that's not a thing from the comics, right?
Not that I'm aware of, but I'll double check. But I want this world. When he walked through and the first time, and his father was happy to see him, and then when his brother shows up and they're all sitting down and, you know, laughing and talking, I so wanted this world to be like that. To be good. But then the real me shows up and immediately says, shut that shit down. It can't be good. It cannot be good. Like these people are horrible, and we're just going to wait to see what the horrible is. It's like, the grass is not always greener. And that is going to, I am so sad for Chris that that's going to play out. That he's going to learn that it's not always greener. That, in fact, that it could be quite horrible, quite deadly on the other side of the fence. And I think that's what he's going to learn. I don't trust the brother. I don't trust the father. This may be a world where all their racist dreams came true. We're living in some sort of, you know, Nazi propaganda state or some shit. But I just don't, buy that this world is as nice and welcoming as it appears right now.
Yeah. So I have to say, Paulson 20 pointed out in the Discord that rainbow creature we see in the backgrounds, you know, top trio defeats Ultra Humanite, which is like a super intelligent ape villain before Lex Luthor. And rainbow creature is an interesting one. Gnarls points out, anyone by the way who doesn't know, Gnarls is a lore master who requested that we always pronounce his name with a like a question. But Gnarls pointed out that this is, it's kind of a sus monster to go with, that maybe the rainbow creature, the drain's color, might have deeper meaning. I end up, of course, reading up on this out of curiosity. And so this comes, this super old Batman villain from, you know, another deep cut from James Gunn, from Batman Volume 1, number 134, from September 1960. So we're going way back. And this is, my summary I wrote up of the genuine, actual in-universe lore. So Rainbow Creature was born of a volcano in South America Republic as a wannabe dictator was trying to take over the country. Batman exposes the would-be dictator's lies and chases him out of town using the power of a rainbow, and then teams up the locals to defeat the creature by tricking it into using up its powers until it blows away in the wind. Don't tell me old DC's not political.
The rainbow bat suit has been the target of some controversy lately, if you have been paying attention to the Lego Batman game.
I mean, and I think that also it's not, you know, this fighting against the rainbow concept. It's not an accident that they reminded us in the opening audition scene that Chris Smith is bi. You know, he feels no personal shame for that. He's like, you know, sucking dick's a compliment, as he says.
Right.
Love that. Yeah.
but maybe in this universe. Ooh, I'm wondering now if that's going to be, if I'm assuming at this point he's going to like go and pretend to be himself some more and, you know, just because he got a taste. Maybe that's how he outs himself, by being open about that. And they're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. I'm interested in how... Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Aaron.
I'm interested in how alternate Amanda Harcourt is going to play into all of this, because she was a prominent part of the dance in the opening scene.
That's true.
Yeah. She was giving me, I don't know if you guys got any sinister vibes from that, but like maybe it was because I know they have to do serious faces for that dance. That's what they're instructed to do because it's funnier that way. But also like the conservative, like kind of frumpy, quote unquote, like trad wife clothes.
totally.
I don't know. What do you think?
It's all sus.
And we find out that she is now with, quote unquote, that jarhead. So it means someone in the Marines. What if it's Rick Flagg?
Rick Flagg. Jr., yes.
Who Peacemaker killed.
That would be awesome.
I could see that. Maybe that. I don't know if they would keep that secret till the end. Anyway. Yeah. I'm interested to see, like, okay, if this is how the season is starting out, how is it going to escalate from here?
I mean, it's gonna be a wild ride.
Yeah.
it's gonna be one hell of a ride, because this show gives absolutely zero fucks.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to tell this story, and this story is not for the faint of heart. So buckle in.
Were you excited to hear the reference to, they said that Chris Smith in that other universe went to Bloodhaven, which is Gotham's sister city.
Yeah. Where, you know, Nightwing, Dick Grayson calls home in the comics now. So for a long time. And that's exciting. That's exciting.
I think if it entices you at all, Aaron, I think it's, I remember, it's definitely from Harley Quinn that she goes at one point there.
Nice. Yeah, all of the Robins, especially Nightwing, are some of my favorite characters in DC comics. So, yeah, definitely. I hope we get some kind of reference, if not a little bit of a cameo from
that. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I mean, they're setting it up as, I mean, I suppose perhaps Nightwing exists in this universe, but I'm not holding my breath for a cameo yet. It would be funny if they invited, if James Gunn introduced Nightwing before Batman.
Yeah.
You know, I got the vibe that there are no other heroes in this universe.
In the other alternate universe.
In the alternate universe.
Mm.
Like the trio's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
I got a
vibe like that's. Like they run this town, like this entire universe.
They certainly seem to have a lot of money.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah.
And a lot of accolades.
Maybe instead of Lord Tech, maybe it's Augie Tech.
A lot of money, a lot of accolades, a lot of, you know, like trophies almost.
Yeah, and they all, Augie shared jetpacks with his son. They all get to fly. Doesn't Peacemaker have a jetpack in the comics?
Yes.
Yeah. So I'm assuming this one will just steal that, and hopefully we get some fun training montage scenes and Vigilante should be involved.
Do not give Vigilante jetpacks, please. That's going to be a disaster.
Our Peacemaker might already have a jetpack if he hadn't put a spike through alternate Peacemaker.
Oh, that's true. I guess right. That got you're the jetpack right. too, right?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's right.
Yeah. What do you think that spike was? Is this random spiky spike in the ceiling?
I don't know. That's why we need answers.
Random gobbledygook technology. Yeah.
We need answers.
It's the double killing spike. It was funny though to see the other bedroom and how it's just like everything's a little bit off. Like it reminded me, okay, so there's the Hanoi Rocks, but instead it's a band that we know Peacemaker that likes, and but instead of rocks spelled R-O-C-K-S, it's R-O-X-X. Scorpions with a Z reminds me of like reminds me of Thunderbolts, like we're the Avengers with a Z. Like there's just something off on this one. It's pour some honey on me, which is not how that song goes. So yeah, it just feels like we're being warned. We're being warned. Wait, what did you guys think of the new Oh Lord song for the opening number by Foxy Shazam, James Gunn's favorite band?
It's really stuck in my head.
Yeah. I liked it. I thought the whole opening dance number was very, you know, Broadway. And I enjoyed it. I thought it was everything about it, the song, the dance, it just felt like taken from a musical that I could have gone to watch. Really cool.
We're going to speculate about some future stuff. So if anyone does not want to hear about stuff in the trailers, then we'll say goodbye to you now. And we'll be back next week around the same time with a breakdown of episode 2. And we've been glad to have you. If you want to look ahead with us, we're starting with this opening number. Again, choreographed by Carissa Barton, who did the season 1 choreo. And James Gunn said that the lyrics have some meaning for the season, as he also said about season 1.
Okay.
So it's interesting. It's about it's a hungry world. They're going to eat you alive. When their fangs sink in, I'm like, vampires? No, I doubt really. Not literally. Are there? There must be vampires in DC.
Somewhere,
I can't think of any. I'm like, oh, there's one, but no, Marvel. No, Marvel. No, that's Marvel.
DC did a whole alternate thing ongoing. DC versus vampires.
Okay.
Yeah, the second round of storytelling is about to end. But which was a great, you know, alt universe type of story that they told. It was really awesome.
Okay. I'm looking through these lyrics more, and there's also, you try and sleep even though you're alone. You just close your eyes, boy. You dream of home. The light is always on. So I think this is talking about how his universe is his real home, and the light is always on for him to go back to it. Because there's always a wrong to your right, and there's always a war somewhere to fight. Yeah. And I think, every universe has its pros and its cons, but maybe Chris is a better person in his universe, even though he killed his dad and his brother. Or especially because he killed his dad in a shame about his brother.
Yeah.
So hide the song away for a darker day when you're on your knees screaming, oh Lord, I'm always there. Just keep you in mind when you wake in the morning, you'll be satisfied. I do notice that in the opening number, there seems to be some emphasis on the romance between Chris and Emilio.
Yeah.
Does that bother either of you? Or are you excited?
Together. I think they're made for each other with their issues. I think either they're going to work to destroy each other or they're going to work to heal each other. I don't know which one, though.
Well, there's two universes versions, so maybe both.
Yeah.
A lot can go wrong with that pairing. A lot can go wrong.
Yeah, but we get some teases of who else might be coming this season. There's an older woman in the back. We don't know anything about. We'll find out who she is. There's a bunch of agents, I suppose, dressed in all black. But two who we do recognize, one from last season, is Nutley's returning as Judo Master, a.k.a. Rip Jaeger. We know from the trailers, apparently he's going to be assigned to Economos' team. Do you think he's assigned to work for Economos or as the supervisor?
Oh, gosh. I think he's assigned to kill him if he has to.
We just see him, like, that Rick Flagg's like, joining your team is this, and he's like, come on.
Yeah, their unresolved beef will definitely get in the way.
Yes.
And we know we're getting Michael Roker is in the opening dance, and he's going to be playing a character I already hate called Red St. Wild. And the official description of this character is the world's foremost eagle hunter who is on a mission to kill eagles. Why? Why?
Eagly never hurt nobody.
I know, yeah. Well, except for those people we saw him kill, but they deserve it.
That's not his fault. He's just an eagle.
It's potato chip psychosis, you know?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to, in the trailers, we get the tease, Vigilante. Hopefully we get that scene that plays out where it looks like he's showing up at the orgy the next morning to confront Chris. We also going to meet Vigilante's mom. But it looks like from the trailers, we're going to see a bit of Adebayo, Vigilante, and Chris as a trio together. And I'm all in for that. John, you and I, well, with Eagly, we said those were our three favorite characters.
Yeah.
And it seems in the trailers, we see Chris will tell Adebayo about the QUD. I guess Economos already did. But it looks like she's going to help him. Looks like Peacemaker is going to be exploring those other dimensions more predictably. But he also seems to be carrying around some sort of portable portal tech. So I don't know who could have, like, could Max Lord come back and make something like that or what? Or does he already have it?
Maybe he gets it from said alternate universe.
Maybe. From his Augie Smith over there or something.
Yeah. I thought it was interesting how casual the alternate universe trio was about going through those doors. They seem like they've been exploring the alternate dimensions pretty much since Peacemaker and Keith were kids.
Yeah, absolutely. That's probably why he didn't think it was weird that he was in there in the hallway. I mean, I suppose, right. Yeah, if they had a better relationship, it seemed like Augie used it a lot. I wonder about their mom. We never hear about that.
We don't.
We don't know if she died in the DC universe or what, but maybe in this other universe, she was around more. All right. Any last thoughts on this episode or hopes for this season ahead?
Hopes. Tell me all about the Q. I want to know all how these dimensional doors got there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see, you don't have to show it to me being done, but I need some sort of explanation for that. That's the one big thing that I want to get out of this season, hopefully.
Okay.
I'm going to put down some internet points here and say the season is going to end with Economos as the head of Argus.
Instead of Amanda Waller.
Yeah. I think
Okay, wow.
We do think that there's a Waller show still coming, but we don't know what that's going to look like at all.
I hope they end up putting that Waller show out. That would be awesome.
That would be.
And I hope someone else is in it, but I don't want to spoil it for Aaron, even though we've talked about it in previous episodes.
That's all right. I don't mind the spoilers.
Like Slother. Well, so we'll be back every week to talk through the Peacemaker episodes as they come out. 8 episodes in total. We do not have access to screeners, so we will be doing them a few days after, like this one. The episodes themselves drop on HBO Max on Thursday evenings in the Americas, Fridays for the rest of us. And the next week's episode, it looks like the longest we know of so far, as you said, Jean, 48 minutes. Titled "A Man Is Only as Good as His Bird," which is so true. Eagly's the best boss. I'll also put links in the show notes to the recent Superman coverage and Creature Commandos coverage from January, if you're still catching up on DCU with those. And Marvel fans, also, you'll find in the show list recent episodes on Ironheart, Fantastic Four, First Steps. We're going to be doing Eyes of Wakanda coming up soon. We're catching up on this other stuff and life stuff. And then, of course, we've got a couple more Marvel shows coming this year. What are you most looking forward to, Jean? Marvel Zombies or Wonder Man? Actually, I think I know the answer, but
Wonder Man.
Yeah, Wonder Man. Okay. What about you, Aaron? Are you going to watch either of them?
Yeah, I'll definitely watch Marvel Zombies. We'll see about Wonder Man.
Okay. I'm excited for them both for the different reasons. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what's going on in Radioactive Ramblings? Gen V's starting soon, right?
Yes, we will be doing full coverage of Gen V and then Fallout shortly after that. I think they overlap just a little bit. Until then, we will have some sporadic episodes of either Studio Ghibli or Fallout lore, but now is a good time if you haven't listened to any of our Fallout lore episodes to go back and listen to especially the Legion and Mr. House episodes.
Do you know what your next Studio Ghibli movie is going to be?
I want to say it's going to be Porco Rosso.
Okay.
I think.
Sort of.
Yeah.
That's a fun one. All right. Well, if you want to find Radioactive Ramblings, you'll find a link tree in the show notes with links to all the affiliates, including Nevermind the Music, Where Psychology Meets Music, Rings and Rituals, going deeper on Rings of Power, Properly Howard's movie reviews is wrapping up there. Bacon Wrap season, although Anthony was just saying that they're going to sneak in an extra episode about the new movie Friendship with Tim Robinson and Kate Mara and Paul Rudd. So yeah, that's one that I was already looking forward to seeing. So I'm looking forward to them doing that episode about it. We'll shift dust, Doom book coverage, the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast coming back soon with more High Republic coverage, and subscribers are going to get some, I think a couple short recap episodes about the material leading up to the new season of Star Wars Visions, which is going to have some repeat stuff and going deeper on the Ronin book and things like that. So also on the main Lorehounds feed, Foundation season 3 coverage is ongoing with John and Marilyn. Are you watching that one, Aaron?
I love Foundation. It's just incredible. The visuals, everything about it. And John and Marilyn's coverage is such a great companion to go along with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love getting the book reader perspective. And, David's leading weekly coverage of Alien Earth had just dropped. So we did last week a Gilded Age episode, which was our record at the time at nearly 3 hours, covering the first three seasons of the Gilded Age, talking about the history and the characters and what's coming. And then David beat us, I think, by 8 minutes, Brian said, with the episode 3 breakdown of Alien Earth. With he had this week as his guest host, Mark from Nevermind the Music and Ian from Captain's Pod. So that just came out. I haven't gotten to listen to it yet, but I'm looking forward to it. You're watching Alien Earth as well, right, Aaron? Jean and I have talked about it before, which is why I asked you.
I actually am very far away from the Alien franchise. I think I watched the original Alien movie and that's about it. That's all I have under my belt. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you don't have to have watched anything for Alien Earth. It's set just before the original movie.
Okay. And is it worth the watch, you think?
So far, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
I might have to check it out then.
It's Noah Hawley, who is a very inventive TV auteur, I would say. You know, he really has unusual ways of framing things with the camera and telling stories and with unreliable narrators and, you know, trippy visuals. And yeah.
Nice. Well, I'm a sucker for sci-fi, so I'm in.
Yeah. If anyone at home has any feedback about the Peacemaker show that you want to share, we'll discuss it on a future episode. Just send that to comicsvs@thelorehounds.com. You'll find that in the linked in the show notes as well. And also in the link tree in the show notes is a link to our Discord, where there is a forum with spoiler chats per movie or show or episode of Peacemaker under the DCU forum, currently under current shows. If you're listening to it later, you'll find it under franchises. And if you have the means and interest, then we would love your extra support with our Supercast or Patreon feed, which gives you ad-free access to all of our podcasts, all of the content from the public feed, plus bonus contents like extra episodes for certain shows like Andor and Wheel of Time and Rings of Power, which watching short episodes about things like weapons or life with Chuck, things like that, and also our monthly Second Breakfast and Elevensies episodes. Just released before this will be the poutine episode, and then this month is David's month doing 80s, 90s spoofs, and Airplane is the big winner there. So I think this is going to be my first time watching Airplane.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
I know, like, Don't Call Me Shirley. I know that's, you know, from Airplane. I know.
Let's have one of them hard ciders next to you.
Yeah. Yeah. It's probably for the best. All right. I'm going to put on some music now. You ready for it?
Oh, God.
80s folder again. In honor of Peacemaker's Journey Odyssey. Here we go. We're going to say some thank yous. Oh, this is actually much mellower than I expected. But still, thank you to our Discord server boosters, Aaron K., Tilla the Thriller, Doove71, Athena Agileia, Listu, Nancy M., Ghost of Partition, and Radioactive Richard. Thank you to our lore masters, Samartian Michael G., Michelle E., Brian E., SC, Peter OH, Adam S., Nancy M., Doove71, Brian8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Garrett C., Matthew M., Sarah M., Andra B., Kwong Yu, Deadeye Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Alex V., Sub-Zero, Aaron K. again, Dali V., Mothership61, Gnarls, Kathy W., Listu, Jeffrey B., Elisa U., Neil F., Ben B., Scott F., Stephen N., Julia F., Carly S., Ilmariel, /Tim, Paul K., Bobby C., Jessica H., Red Zippy, a.k.a. Lisa C. I saw just before we started recording that the TCS just became a Lore Master as well. So welcome.
Thank you and welcome.
Thank you. And Jean, what are your final thoughts to share with the world this fine episode?
Yeah, again, Kevin Feige, recast T'Challa, Damson Idris, just stop playing games, man. Just come out and do it. This is what the people want. It's going to be 2026 in a few months. Stop playing games. Recast T'Challa.
And James Gunn, bring back Aldous Hodge as Hawkman. Thank you.
Yeah, we could do that too. Yes.
The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.